Welcome to Wild Quincy, a podcast that looks into the little-known and forgotten past of Quincy, Illinois.
Quincy has seen its fair share of violent acts in its history, but one 1976 unsolved murder is still talked about today. Find out about the gruesome murder of Stanley Goodside with returning guest Rodney Hart. That coming up next.
Now, here's your host, Chris Ketters and Travis Hoffman.
Back here for another one of our episodes as we get closer to the end of season five. And Travis, good news, no political riots since our last episode. So that's good news.
We stirred the pot, but not enough to cause a scene. So that's good.
So yeah, check out that. We talked about a very unique event that happened here in Adams County back in the 1860s with the Stones Prairie Riot. Very interesting story. So check that out. Talked about a little bit more on the Patreon side. We'll have a promo about that coming up in a little bit, Travis. But we, of course, love our fans. We love that when we get listeners that send us email. And I noticed, I was going to point this out, I'm probably putting you on the spot, but we had a listener, Crystal, I believe is her name. You guys have been having a conversation about some statue somewhere, right, in Quincy that we have no idea what's
you've
about.
Probably been by it. Yeah, it's in one of the oh, I didn't even know off the top of my head which park there, the Windy Road parks there north of town, Gardner, Riverview. It's George Rogers Clark, not the Lewis and Clark that we all know of, but that mm-hmm. Clark's older brother, I believe, is who this guy is. And he was was a Revolutionary War hero, and responsible for a lot of the Illinois territory expansion and whatnot, but not really super connected to Quincy.
not statue worthy.
but that's the thing. That's the suspicion, is we're trying to figure out, like, and maybe someone has an answer. And if you do, let us know, wildquincy@gmail.com. But why was Quincy selected? Did they just have an opening for a statue and some guy needed to put a statue? We just don't know. And we're trying to figure it out. Crystal and I had a fun exchange, and she didn't have a whole lot of answers, I don't think, in her searching. So the search continues. But thank
could
you,
it have Crystal. Some? Yeah, thanks, Crystal. Could it have something to do with Quincy having the first veterans home in the state?
I don't know. I just don't know what I don't know. But I'm sure someone knows more than I do, and hopefully we'll hear about it.
Yeah, so these are the things that we enjoy to find out. If there's something that's, kind of reminds you of those old days with the Quincy Herald Whig when they used to have, like, Ask the Experts.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
If there's something out there you're curious about that's Quincy-based, let us know. We'll try to track some down. Heck, who knows? Maybe it'll become an episode in its own.
That little seed of an email may grow into something in a full-length episode.
You never know. No. You never know. So, and it's funny. We'll talk about this episode coming up in just a minute, which kind of came from that, actually. So we'll give you details about that in a second. But, Travis, we do it every episode, and this one's no different. Your track record's about middle of the road for our question of the day. Are you ready for this one?
Should I even ask
that question anymore?
I'm never really ready, Chris, but I'll pretend like I am. What do we got?
This is a current question for you, all right?
Okay.
We're going to talk about Amtrak. The Amtrak station between Quincy and Chicago it leaves twice a day.
Chris, okay? I have a quick story about that.
Okay.
So I'm not too far off from where Amtrak traverses through Quincy on 12th Street there, where you go under the bridge that says Poopers now. We won't go into that. That's a Patreon episode. My kids and I have, and my wife, we have this game where if we go under that bridge as a train's going over it, it's good luck for the day.
Right? Oh, cool. That's a good idea.
Because most trains are so long and slow that it's hard not to. But if you find yourself under an Amtrak train, I mean, that's so short and so fast that we've decided that's four times luck. So as we were leaving for the store this afternoon, what do I see coming speeding down? The Amtrak train. So I gun it in the van and scare the crap out of my wife as there's a car quickly getting closer to us from the front as I'm But I'm like, I'm making that good luck four times good luck. And yeah. I made the luck and I knew you were in the car.
So. Nice.
You're welcome.
Well, there you go. So now we know the secrets to good luck in Quincy.
Don't ride with me if there's an Amtrak train coming underneath the 12th Street Bridge there.
12th Street Bridge.
You got a question for me. I'll shut up and let you get to it.
No, you're totally fine. That's a great story. The Amtrak station, of course, as you just mentioned, Quincy to Chicago. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm guessing in that situation, it's probably going over to West Quincy for the day.
I was going towards the station.
Okay. That particular time. Well, on average, the route is 4 hours and 21 minutes to get from Chicago to Quincy or vice versa. The question's this, how many stops are between Quincy and Chicago? Yeah. So I'm going to give you some options, of course. Is it 6, 7, 8, or 9?
Oh, you know, that's as much gap as I have. You didn't give me at least a little padding.
No, not at all.
Oh, Lord, I'm not feeling good about this at all.
We don't make it easy at all. So
I haven't done that route for a good 12 years.
I've never done it. Really? So, okay. Yeah. They're cheap rates, by the way. I'm not, this isn't an Amtrak promotion, but like $60 gets you one way. I mean, it's not bad. So, and that's business class.
Both my kids are almost out of car seat territory. And that's the one thing that's been keeping us from taking a day trip up to Chicago on the train.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't want to have to mess with an Uber and then have it lugging a car seat around. That sounds like a pain.
Yeah, I get that.
It's getting close.
Yeah. Well, here you go. So anyway, we're going to tell you about how many stops. We'll let Travis think about that. We'll tell you guys the answer at the end of this episode. But for this episode, we are going to talk about a very interesting case. It's a case that is unfortunately one of the more gruesome ones that we're going to be discussing. It's about Stanley Goodside, and we'll talk about that next here on Wild Quincy. Here's what you missed on the latest After Hours episode of Wild Quincy. One morning when Paul came to school, he found the entrance to the schoolyard surrounded by a crowd of kids. This entrance was on Payson Avenue. Then, at the top of the stairs, there were two fellows who were holding a rope stretched across the entrance and would not permit any of the boys or girls to enter the schoolyard. When he asked what the trouble was, they yelled in unison, "This is a strike." Yes, this was a strike by the pupils of Irving School, and here's what they were striking for.
Okay,
this is pretty good. 1 hour recess and 2 hours at noon. Okay. Our After Hours episodes are available exclusively for Patreon members by going to patreon.com/wildquincy. For just a couple dollars a month, not only will you double the amount of Wild Quincy episodes at your fingertips, but you'll also be supporting our efforts as we continue to dive into the wild and crazy history of our favorite town. Also, as a Patreon member, you can take part in our live events and Patreon-only outings, as well as having access to our regular episodes 2 days before they are released to the public. It's easy. Just head to patreon.com/wildquincy. That's Patreon, patreon.com/wildquincy, and become a wild thing today. Here for another episode, and you know, sometimes when you get some of these crazy episodes, you have to bring in somebody that brings a little extra firepower to the discussion. And who better to bring in than the legendary? I'm gonna say it, Rodney. Legendary Rodney Hart. How you doing, buddy?
Thank you. I appreciate that, but that's just another polite way of saying the old Rod.
It's a good vintage. You're vintage. You're not old. Yeah. What's old is new again. Hey, welcome back, man. You've been one of our most frequent guests, and you always bring such good insight with your history and the crime reporting and everything else. And this one is no exception, I think.
No, this is a doozy for sure.
I want to preface this by saying that I wrote this down because right before we recorded, when Rodney says something like this, it's worth quoting. He says this is one of the most craziest stories he's ever done.
Yeah.
So for Rodney to say something like that, we are definitely in for a handful tonight, I believe. Am I wrong on this, Travis?
No, you're right. What one other kind of precursor here, you know, as you'll see very quickly, this story does contain some very adult themes. So if there are little ears, you may want to listen to this later when there's not little ears, because it gets a little dicey here. So Fair warning.
So where do we start, guys? I'm going to let you guys go at it. Tell me the story, because I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, Rodney, go ahead and kick it off. I'll probably pepper in a few comments, but sure. Lead the way. The mic is yours.
This story began in November of 2009 when I wrote a blog. I was working for the Quincy Herald Whig, and I had a blog on the Whig. And this was during a time when the Whig was really pushing this social media stuff. This is 2009, which staggeringly is 15 years ago. Good.
The local Q days, right?
Yeah. Well, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I wrote a blog, and I have no idea how I stumbled on this, but a guy named Bob Brewer, I contacted him. I don't know if he called me. He may have seen it. My vague memory is he may have seen a story that I wrote about a bunch of crazy ghost hunters. Does that ring a bell?
No, not at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. Maybe something about Ghost Hollow Road. I don't know.
Yeah. He may have seen something like that. And so Bob, who, by the way, was an alderman in Quincy, you know, pretty well-known guy. This guy, pretty good guy. Who later took guitar lessons from me, actually, believe it or not. He was a really nice guy. And he called me. He said, man, I got a story for you. And he told me about this house that he used to live in that was near 24th and Locust.
Locust, yeah.
Yeah. And it was he lived in this house. It was in sort of behind another house. It was on the northwest, kind of from the intersection there. It was basically, it was sort of behind where Calvary Cemetery is. If you extend past Calvary Cemetery and go back, you'd run into this house. It was an old chicken coop is what it was. He lived there. And when he lived there, and I'm trying to think, in the late 70s, he had just gotten married, and this house had all sorts of strange things going on in it. They would hear a basketball being dribbled. They would hear a bunch of sniffing noises. They would hear things moving, being moved around. And most bizarrely, in Christmas of 1979, he took a photo of his wife taking down some Christmas decorations, and this ghostly apparition of this guy with a long face and a beard appeared in the photo.
Wow.
So this is what Bob told me, and this is not some crazy guy. This is a pretty straight shooter, right? So he told me this story, and I had no idea, none, what had happened to cause that. But I thought it was okay. So I wrote this little harmless blog, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Fast forward a couple of years later, we're going to go to 2012. And there's a woman whose name is Lanny Block. She's the central character here. She's living in Arizona, in the desert in Arizona. And she's hanging out with her grandkids, and she somehow stumbles upon this blog. I don't know how she saw it or how she was directed to it, but she saw it, and she immediately, because this is where she lived when this bizarre love triangle murder story took place. This is where it all happened. She lived there a few years, 1976-77. So she just stumbled onto the blog and saw it. And then I don't know, again, I don't remember if she called me. I think she called me.
I think you used to list your phone number the articles, phone number, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We were, you know, office number, right?
Yeah.
So I think she got a hold of me and she said, well, do you know, like, the story behind that? And I'm like, no, not really. Well, the guy who was murdered, probably in the house, his name was Stanley Goodside, right? And Stanley had polyps in his nose and often went. Stanley was a basketball player. Dribble, dribble, dribble. Stanley liked to draw. And what he would do is he would knock stuff off to the side so he could put his art pad down and start to draw. So Bob, I don't think Bob knew anything about this, but Lanny certainly did. So she connected the dots for me. This is where she lived with the Stanley guy. All right. Lanny Block was married to a guy named Roger Aldrich. And in 1974, they moved to Quincy. Roger Aldrich got a job at a company called Colt Industries, and he worked there. They bought a house. It's the house is still there. I'm going to give you the address. It's 1631 North 24th. And they rented that house out, and they lived in the behind that house in a converted chicken coop. Hmm. And they met sometime after they moved there. They met this guy named Stanley Goodside at a John Denver concert in Iowa. And they got friendly with him. And then Lanny, my memory of this, this is 2012 when I talked with her, so it was a while ago, but she was a very unassuming, really, you could tell she was an interesting individual. And I said, well, how did Stanley Goodside end up living with you, Lanny? Oh, well, you know, it was a wife swapping. We had a wife swapping weekend. She was a hippie. She was a child of the 70s. Wow. Right?
This is like Haight-Ashbury in Quincy, Illinois.
Yes, it is.
Days. I mean, this was not your typical Quincy setup.
No. And you got to.
No, very, very radical for the area.
Very radical. And you got to remember, back then, that area out there was way out of town.
Boonies,
Was way out of town. There was nothing around there. Not really. I don't think there was hardly any. There were some houses and stuff, but there was very little. Like now you go down to 24th and Locust, and that's what, on the northwest side, right? Big deal. Sure. Then that was like, you could compare today to going to Marblehead. It was just way out of the way. So they had their own little private deal back there, right? So anyway, Lanny got chummy with Stanley Goodside and started having an affair with him while they were living with Roger in this house. I'm not making it up. She told me that.
Lot of activity going on between lots of people, it sounds like, in this household.
And when I pressed her about that, she said, well, Roger had his girlfriends too. Okay, all right. So it finally got to the point where Roger Aldrich moved out. He left. And that was, I don't know, 76, maybe something like that. Okay, before that, though, in September of 1975, Lanny and Roger and, no, Lanny and Roger got busted. They grew pot back there, a lot of pot. And if you look up the paper from back then, September 75, the sheriff's department claimed that they got 930 pounds of pot plants.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's
quite a production.
Yeah. This is, again, an out area that's remote. You know, they could just do whatever they wanted. And it looked a lot different back then than it does now. Now it's been plowed over and it's a field and it's all cleaned up. Back then,
I think Stanley might have been arrested too at the same time.
Stanley and Lanny were arrested. And I think Roger was too. I think you're right. Okay. By the way, I gleaned a lot of info from their attorney. Hmm. Their attorney was a young Jack Ingram.
Nice.
Yeah.
Saxophone legend.
Played with Freddie Teekin and the Rockers. There's a wild Quincy for you right there.
That's true. I'll have to visit that well someday.
Yeah. Jack was back then a fledgling lawyer that still practices law in Quincy. And he defended them, and he described them as being this sort of hippie couple and very free, et cetera. Well, Roger, right after that happened, he moved out. And I think he moved up to Burlington, Iowa or somewhere. Well, then Stanley and Lanny got busted again. I think sometime after that. So Lanny told me that it wasn't the original pot bust wasn't 930 pounds. It ended up being 13 pounds. She said it was not as deal, but okay. So they're in trouble here, right? Okay. So in April of 1976, Roger Aldrich is living up in Iowa or somewhere with his son and Lanny's son, who's about 8 years old. And Lanny agrees to drive to her hometown of Sullivan, Illinois, which is near Decatur. Roger picks her up in Quincy and takes her there to Lanny's family farm to spend some time with their son. That's the weekend that the authorities and the law enforcement and the prosecutors in this case allege that that Roger Aldridge killed Stanley Goodside while Lanny was up in Sullivan with her family on the family farm. He picked her up, drove her there, then he picked her up again at the end of the weekend and drove her back to Quincy. In between that time, that's what they think happened. So in April of 1976, Lanny got back, actually. I remember her telling me this. She got back to that house and there was no sign of Stanley. No idea where he was, but there was blood in the house and there was blood all over the bathtub. It was a pink chipped bathtub and the bathtub had all kinds of chips in it. And she immediately thought, oh, something awful has happened. A short time goes by and they find Stanley's torso, just his torso, in Sullivan, Illinois, in some remote area. And I can't remember what it was called, but Lanny's sister told me what it was called. But so that was found April 4th. The torso was found in Sullivan. 2 days later, Lanny is walking the dogs behind the house up towards Calvary Cemetery with a friend. And she notices in this sort of overgrown bushy area by a creek that there's a garbage bag there. And she notices when she picks the garbage bag up, a washcloth falls out of the garbage bag. It was her washcloth, and a human thumb is in the washcloth. So immediately she's, uh-oh, okay. Then a little while later, I don't think it was Lanny. I think it was the family friend finds the head of Philip Stanley Goodside. Finds the head. It was in a plastic garbage bag or something that falls out.
I think the head, the feet, and the hands.
And the hands, yes. Yeah. The head was in one bag, the feet were in another bag, and the hands were in another bag. And then there was a thumb, and I think there was one other part, too. So he was chopped up into six different pieces. And so, there, okay, who's immediately suspected of doing this? Roger, right?
Right.
Roger disappeared.
Real quick, Ron, I don't know if you covered it, and forgive me if you did, but before this happened, Lanny found out that she was pregnant with Stanley's
I believe so.
Child.
I believe so. Yeah. I believe that
and
is correct.
Roger was none too happy with this.
No, definitely not. I believe that is correct, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in another
great.
Little as we go along. Wow. So Stanley's found in pieces and they think Roger did it. Roger disappears for 3 months. He claimed he was in Illinois and Missouri and Iowa. Later they found out he was actually down in Mexico with his son.
On vacation, he says.
Yeah, on vacation for 3 months. Yeah. And they were looking for him. Did you get that? I think I sent you that poster.
I did.
Yeah, from the Illinois State Police. They put out like he was one of the most wanted guys in the state of Illinois. And it was he was considered extremely dangerous, armed and extremely dangerous at that time. So anyway, he somehow gets convinced to turn himself in. So in July of that year, he turns himself in on July 25th, 1976. In November of 1976, he goes on to trial for a pot bust. And Jack Ingram was the defense attorney. Lanny pled guilty. She had another pot bust looming. That one was her and Stanley had another one looming, but that never got because she agreed to plead guilty to this one and the other one was dropped. Okay?
Gotcha.
Stanley, however, insisted that he was innocent. And a young assistant state's attorney named, ready, John Barnard, prosecuted the case. John Barnard, longtime state's attorney in Illinois. who just prosecuted the case as an Illinois special appellate prosecutor, a special prosecutor, sorry, involving the guy who killed the young child of the woman that he, right. Remember that was just a little, it was like,
yeah, that was horrible. Yeah.
John is retired, sort of, but he still works for the state of Illinois and he comes in on conflict of interest. He's still active. He remembered that case. I remember him telling me, yeah, I remember going to that house and seeing the chipped pink bathtub. And he said that Roger Aldridge was a really cold, aloof dude, really cold. Roger Aldridge gets found guilty and gets sentenced by a judge named Schultz. Remember him? Judge Schultz sentences him to between 1 and 5 years in the Department of Corrections.
This is for the pot charge, right?
This is for the pot bus. Right. This is for the pot bus. Okay? Well, then they put him on trial for murder. The state's attorney at that time was the late Bob Beer, whose son Barney later became the state's attorney. Okay, Bob. I knew Bob. Great guy and a very good state's attorney. The defense attorney in Roger Aldridge's murder trial for the murder of Stanley Goodside. Are you ready? Are you sure?
I think so.
Because I think you've heard this name before. Drew Schnock.
Huh. Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
His daughter, Casey, just was the defense attorney in the Bleefnik murder trial.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Drew, who I always got along pretty well with Drew, but you know, he's a very good at what he does. Really good at what he does. He's a very good defense attorney. If I ever got in any trouble around here, he would be one of the first people I call. I really would, because he knows what he's doing. Anyway, he was Roger Aldridge's defense attorney. And guess what? Even though they had evidence of the triangle, the love triangle, and when he disappeared and blah, blah, blah. Remember, this is the 70s. There's no DNA, right? And there was no witness to the actual murder. There, you know, he had an alibi. The jury was out for 10 hours, and they found Roger Aldridge not guilty of killing Stanley Goodside. I'm going to make a kind of a bold statement here and say that had this happened today with DNA evidence, etc., maybe a different outcome. Maybe.
Right.
Well, so hold on. So what the heck could they have possibly done as a defense to find him not guilty? What?
Because nobody saw him do it.
Wow, really?
Nobody saw him do it. And plus, the trial, I believe, was in Adams County. And here's this wacky hippie, you know, weird couple that lived in outside of town. There was that aspect of it.
They didn't have any advocates that I don't were think they ready to fight for it.
I don't think they really did. And Lanny more or less said that when I talked to her about this. And she said that, you know, the people of Quincy kind of turned against her during this whole thing. And she said she found out, you know, quickly who her real friends were when all this stuff happened, because a lot of people turned against her. And you know, this, I don't know. I you know, obviously I have not seen any trial transcripts, but Drew, who is an excellent defense attorney, he's real good at muddying those waters, as we like to say it. I think he just convinced the jury. I think the jury probably knew that he probably did it, but there was reasonable doubt. There was the evidence was not convincing. There was no one.
He definitely utilized another person that doesn't get a lot of coverage. I think his name was Jay, who was a friend, I guess, of the couple, who I guess had kind of a notorious history. And I don't have all the facts in front of me, but I think his history involved having a history of abusing animals, which if you follow serial killers, there is a lot of connection there with animal cruelty and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that was his big leverage from the little bit that I've read about the proceedings. But apparently it didn't have enough traction to really point the scope to him, I guess.
No,
I don't know. It's weird.
And you know, Philip, you know, Stanley Goodside was this weird hippie dude. Right.
Well, and I was just getting ready to say, too, is that they're selling marijuana, obviously, back in this time frame. Who's to say that that's a bad drug bust or a bad drug situation that happens and you get murdered by somebody else? I mean, that's how I would be as a defense attorney.
Okay. And, well, I don't know if any of that was entered into evidence. I'm not sure. It would have had to have been, there would have had to have been a motion hearing to get that
submitted. Right.
But, you know, people who lived in Adams County were on that jury there. You know, they see stuff, they know. So, but here's the interesting part. At the end of the trial got done. And according to the newspaper articles, Roger Aldridge was trembling, was shaking when the not guilty verdict was read. And then he got up and he shook hands with several of the jurors as they left the jury
box. Oh, my. Wow.
You won't see that today. No.
Wow.
So Lanny then moved. Actually, I think she had already moved by then.
I think her probation was transferred into Arizona.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Drew told me that he remembers that during the trial, Lanny was there at the trial with her daughter, and the daughter looked exactly like Stanley Goodson.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure, that was it. So Lanny then made a wise decision and just left, just started over, went out west and lived out her days in the desert. I remember trying to call her to do this story, and it was difficult because I would talk to her for 3 or 4 minutes and then the phone would die because she was in the middle of nowhere.
right.
In 2012.
Wow.
I don't know. Has phone service improved since then?
Probably not.
Probably debatable in some areas. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but she moved out there and by all accounts, I think it was a good move for her. Ironically, Roger Aldridge moved to the Phoenix area for a while.
Is that right?
Yeah. And on occasion, Lanny told me she'd run into him. She went to a reunion, a class reunion in Sullivan, where they were both from, I guess. And there he was. Oof. But she said that he wouldn't even acknowledge her, and he walked out of the room as soon as she walked in. And I said, well, Lanny, were you ever physically afraid that, you know, he'd come after me, after you? And Lanny, I can still remember her saying this to this day. She said, no, he was a lot more afraid of me than I was.
Sounds like a bit of a spitfire.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Lanny lived out her days first near Tucson in the desert. And then she lived in another little town somewhere. I got the name of it here. Cascabel, something like that.
Okay.
And then she passed away of cancer and COPD almost exactly a year ago. And I got a nice message from her sister, Lori, who lives up in Iowa, and had several good exchanges with her. Her sister had stumbled onto the article too, had read it, and she said, oh, I'm going to write a book about this. So I need to talk to them. I said, okay, well, I mean, I know these people are still around. You got to track them down. That was about a year ago. And I think Roger is living, I think he ended up back in that Sullivan area. And about a year ago, I was told that he was, you know, in pretty poor health and in an assisted living facility. I don't know much more about what happened
to him. Was there anybody ever brought up from after this? Was there anybody else that was brought to trial, anything, or did it just go cold?
Nope. It went completely cold because Stanley Goodside was murdered by Roger Aldridge. I think, okay, that's my own personal opinion. It's not, I obviously wasn't around from back then, but you look at what happened and I think that he did it.
Definitely seems to have motive in a lot of different aspects.
Yeah. The motive was there, and you know, he went and picked her up and got her out of the way. You know, I think that he probably did it. And I think if this case were to be tried today under similar circumstances, I think he'd be found guilty because of the DNA stuff that you can do today. But that wasn't available obviously back in that time. So here's the more interesting part. Well, not more interesting, but here's for you guys being the the interested in the ghost hunting and all that stuff. So when we went to the site where this happened, the house, the chicken coop, converted chicken coop, is no longer there. Okay, not there anymore. The patio area and the foundation and everything, that's still all there, but there's no structure left. So I was reading the story again, and I there was a quote in there from the guy who lived in the house that was in front of there, right? And he said that that his ex-wife, who used to live there with him, would go back there and was troubled. I had a really uneasy feeling about, because I think they may have known what had happened. So she went and put together a peace garden. She built and maintained what she called a peace garden. And this guy said, yeah, after she did that, everything settled down and we never had any more uneasy feelings about what happened back there. That is interesting. And when I talked to Lanny Block in 2012, she was very, very interested in going back to the site of that house. Can you imagine all those years later?
Yeah.
Going back to that place?
Boy, that's wild that she'd even want to at this point.
Well, yeah. she did, and she was interested in going back. I don't think she ever did.
Yeah.
I really don't. Not to my knowledge. Who knows? Maybe she did. But, mm-hmm. When we were talking about it, I said, Lanny, if you ever come back into town and you want to go, you need to call me.
Yeah.
I was being selfish.
Sure.
But that would have been a tremendous, follow up to the follow up.
Yeah.
Story about this weird love triangle and a guy getting chopped up into six different pieces and body parts found half a state away and going to trial and being found not guilty. And the people involved in the case still around almost 50 years later. That's the amazing thing.
Yeah. Right? Didn't Roger take a lie detector test at one point?
He did. And he failed it spectacularly.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
That's Drew told me that, he said he sent him to some up to the Quad Cities or somewhere to take some lie detector test. And back then that wasn't, and I don't think it's still, I don't
yeah,
think
no, it's not. Yeah.
No, yeah. But, yeah.
Interesting nonetheless. Yeah.
Very interesting. And Drew, of course, would never,
right.
Would never say, oh yeah, he did it, but I got him. He would never say that.
Sure.
But,
sure. Sure.
I think Drew, he had a job and he did it very well. And he also, I remember Drew being very complimentary to Bob Beer, who prosecuted the case,
yeah.
Because he had very little to work with. He had all these strange characters, all these weird people, no physical evidence, none. And the fact that he had the jury out for 10 hours meant that, they were considering it.
Yeah.
I bet you there was some wrangling and
where did Roger. This popped in my head. Where did the torso show up at?
Sullivan.
So it showed up in the hometown of the dude that murdered him.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Or that potentially, possibly. When possibly. That, I mean, that would be kind of a red flag right there, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Anecdotal. Yeah.
Would think. But then again, Lanny was from Sullivan, too.
Mm. Okay.
I think the strongest, and maybe not the strongest, but I remember hearing that there was a testimony from a neighbor of when the toll triangle was happening next door. And I believe that Roger was talking to her at one point after he found out that Lanny was pregnant with Stanley's child. And he was hot about it and even said, I want to cut his head off or something to that effect.
Did he really?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, again, that's just, and then in the same breath, I think they all got together and kind of like hugged and made out, with that triangle, who knows what else. It's just, it seemed like that was the piece that had the most meat on the bone. I could be wrong here, but that's the thing that stuck out to me in going through some of these older articles. But that's wild.
I did talk to a neighbor, to a person who lived next to that house there, the main house. And of course, his name escapes me now, but he had lived there for 60 years. Yeah. Oh, yes, I remember them. Oh, yes, yes. She used to bring me over pie, and they used to come over and listen to my wife as she played the piano. Right. And he remembered them very well. Very well.
Yeah,
who knows? That might have been the person involved with what you were talking about there. I'm not sure.
I think it was a different. I remember reading that too. Yeah. I think maybe the. Obviously, the biggest tragedy here is somebody lost their life.
Yeah.
But I think the second tragedy is I think that person was labeled as some freakish drug criminal. And well, that's not the reality of the situation. Philip Stanley Goodside was not really a criminal outside of growing pot, by all accounts, in Lanny, in which she – I mean, tell me a little bit about her reminiscing about Stanley.
Sure. Well, she loved Stanley. That was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
She loved the guy, and he was very he was a completely free spirit. She said that, you know, he would take off and go to California and Mexico or dip all these places without hardly a dime in his pocket. And he was such an engaging person that he would just travel and he would trade. You know, he'd barter. He'd trade.
I think one of the stories is he would stay with a. I don't know if it was some friends in Mexico, and he stopped at Disneyland or Disney World and bought their daughter's shirts in exchange for, you know, staying. And I guess he was also, you know, read the Bible a lot. They were big into growing. They had a huge garden. It wasn't just marijuana plant. Right. It was, you know, and how appropriate that we're recording this on 420. You know, it's interesting that it sounds like this was just. These three fish were in the complete wrong water in Quincy, right. Illinois, in a very conservative area. And then you had Haight-Ashbury pull up next door. You're automatically going to think, well, they've been up to something. Obviously, they're hardened criminals, and better for the, you know, the whole community that these people aren't in it in any necessary.
I would agree with you on that. And you know, today as a society, we're a little bit more. First of all, marijuana is legal.
Exactly. Right? So I mean, in today's world, I mean, obviously they'd be growing a little more than I think is legally allowed. But in today's world, where's the crime there?
There is, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, there wasn't a crime. So it's funny how time plays tricks on perception.
It does. And in the mid 70s in Quincy, Illinois, that stuff just, I don't think it flew. So that was part of the story. But Lanny had, you know, obviously she still had drawings that he would do. You mentioned, Stanley was a spiritual guy. Bob Brewer told me that when they lived in the house, and again, late 70s, maybe 3 years after all this happened, they had a Bible in the house, and it would be flipped open to different pages.
Oh, really?
Very cool.
They wouldn't touch. They didn't have, it would just be randomly flipped open to this and then flipped open to that and then flipped open to that. He says they didn't, you know, they had nothing to do with it. That's another strange thing that was happening in the house. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I know you guys are big into this ghost hunting stuff, and I keep an open mind about it,
right,
but I'm not nuts about it either way, but When somebody tells you a story like that, and this person is not crazy,
and they don't know the history, it sounds like, of that place.
Yeah,
that's a little weird.
That is very strange. So that is the story of a really bizarre murder in Quincy, Illinois, in the mid 70s. So I was hanging out last night with some friends of mine, you know them, Travis, Monica Schultz and her husband, Chris.
Absolutely.
And Chris grew up in Quincy, and Chris, when I started talking about this story, I do remember that. So even though it was almost 50 years ago, it rang a bell with him. And he was just a kid growing up here in town at that time.
Right.
So there's still, I'm sure there's still lots of people who were around back then who wouldn't recall the details, but would probably, you know. And I think also it's really interesting that Lanny you know, this was a horrible, dark time for her, right? As horrible as it got. And yet in 2012, when she stumbled on this blog, she was really gracious. She didn't have to talk to some stupid right. newspaper guy she never met, you know? But she was really gracious, very gracious with her time and with her memories of it. And she was very open. And I can remember, you know, initially interviewing her and then calling her back like a week later, full of like 100 more questions, because there were all kinds of holes here. And she was, she didn't back off from anything. Her story stayed consistent the whole time. And she was 100% honest. Lanny, very sadly, you know, she had more challenges in life, including the child that she had. I believe the child that she had with Roger later took his own life. I think it was maybe a couple of years before I had talked with her. I don't, it was something like that. Yeah. So later in life, she also had her share of, but she was described, if you want to look up her obituary, it's Lanny Block. Was her last name, B-L-O-C-K. And the obituary is really interesting, as interesting as she was. And just about how she was this free spirit, and she loved her grandkids and her great-grandkids, and she liked to sew, and she was a very salt-of-the-earth person, and she was very into nature and communing. And her sister sent me a video of the – it's on YouTube, actually, of the – of the burial ceremony. It was very interesting. Very interesting. Right? Yeah. In the, at their home in the desert in Arizona. So this was a rather, Lanny was a free spirit for sure. And an unusual woman. And I have to thank her for being open and honest and willing to talk about something horrendous that happened. You know, if you have something horrible that happened to you back then, and you moved to another world, let's, you know, the desert of Arizona is a world away from Quincy. You moved to get away from it, and to, I don't think you could ever get away from it, but you know, there's a reason.
Not be reminded of it daily. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet here, all these years later, there, so she was, I really enjoyed, you know, the conversations that I had with her, and I hope she's resting in peace. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Rodney, one thing I want to finish up with this is, and you may have already touched on it, but you know, she obviously was the most connected to it. Was there any doubt in her mind that it wasn't, that it was him, or that he was the one that did it?
She was convinced that he did it.
Yeah.
I think from the very beginning. When she got back and Roger was, Stanley was not there.
I think Stanley missed a surgery appointment for surgery on his nose.
Polyps on his nose because he had trouble with breathing.
Yeah.
And he missed the surgery. The last time anybody saw him was that Friday night before Lanny took off that weekend. And I think it was strange to her that he would he would leave and go places, but he would always tell her. Right.
Yeah.
But in this case, he just completely vanished. And, you know, and then there was blood in the house. There may have been more stuff in the house, too. I don't know. That indicated there may have been. Who knows?
Was she ever put on the stand?
I don't believe that she was. That's a great. You know what, Chris? That's a great question. But I don't think, at least I don't remember. I remember reading the stories about it. Right, it was covered pretty well, and I don't believe that she ever did.
You would think that'd be pretty strong for the prosecution in that case.
Yeah, to bring up, you know, that there was disagreements between the two guys, and I think that much though was pretty obvious, even maybe other people, correct?
The neighbor did testify, and they referred to several exchanges between Rodney and Stanley.
And again, when you put a witness on the stand, you have to weigh, you know, because by that time Lanny was a convicted felon.
She pled guilty to marijuana manufacturing. So I mean, character of that witness probably would have been questionable.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that a prosecutor has to consider.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lanny Block was not a criminal, okay? Right. She was not a criminal. She liked the wacky tobacco. You know, and she was a very holistic kind of a person of the earth. You know, those people are dime a dozen today. But in Quincy, Illinois back then, I don't think so. I don't think there were many people like that.
Yeah.
And the other, you know, it just the funny little things like, oh, yeah, Roger and I, we met, I can still hear her to this day, we met Stanley at a John Denver concert in Iowa, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, wow.
Just like Country Roads Take Us Home, Rodney, you've really brought your A game as usual in talking about this. And this, you know, it's funny to me when this recommendation came up in a random email one day, I'd never heard of it before. And I mean, for your money, Rodney, can you think of a more gruesome murder that happened in Quincy in our lifetime, or kind of, well, before technically Chris and I's lifetime? But I mean, this is pretty severe.
I can think of a few.
Can you?
Okay. I can. I remember the guy who dismembered his victim over at the apartments at 4th and Cedar over there.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, really? Yeah.
That was like probably late 90s.
Yeah, late 90s. I wasn't yet a reporter. I was still in sports at the time. And God, I can't remember the guy's name, but they're out partying with him, and then something happened, and they hacked him apart, and they threw part of the monster behind that. And I can also, we even did one,
Mummy
the
Man?
Huber case. The Mummy. Yeah, the Mummy Ring. Man.
Yep.
Oh, sure.
Pretty gruesome, you know.
That's true. That's true.
I will tell you, for this story, I got to be careful, I guess, but I did get access to some of the evidence that was presented at the trial, both in the case file. I found it somehow in molding away in the courthouse records somewhere. And from a few other sources. And it was pretty gruesome.
Yep.
It was, you know, when they found the sheriff's department was back there, and you know, they took photographs, and I think those photographs were entered into evidence during the trial. But I, as far as, you know, gruesome or heinous, there were other cases, but not
the whole paranormal side too. Is what's so interesting is that that the little breadcrumb trail that led you to digging into this story is just incredible. It's so bizarre, and
it is.
I mean, the whole thing seems like, you know, there should be a book about it, to be honest. And
they're probably good.
Yeah, that it is what it is. But we just want to thank you again, Rodney, for coming on tonight and sharing that with us. Because I think that's one of these stories that I think it's easier just to forget about, and you take the context of that story in the newspapers of that time. But if you were to apply the context today, I mean, this murder victim, I think, gets a lot more compassion if you think about, you know, who this person really was. And I think that's maybe the biggest travesty in this story is how he was kind of written off.
I agree with you. And you know what I'm going to do too? I'm going to make sure that Lanny's sister, who lives up in Iowa, is aware of what we're doing here with Wild Quincy. And I'll make sure that she's able to, you know, if she chooses to, to have to another excellent job by you guys, bringing a story, a long, long ago, long forgotten story. And it's important for her as Lanny's sister to know that I thought Lanny was the bomb. I love her. And I didn't even know her. I only talked to her on the phone long distance five or six times. Okay. But there was something about her that really I identified with her, and I had a lot of compassion. Yeah. She went to hell back, you know.
Absolutely.
She was married, and I know that there was a strange love triangle and blah, what, but she was married to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Nuts. And And I'm glad that she was able to get out and live out, you know, her life in the desert, which and by all accounts, you know, she loved it out there. So
yeah, those who dance to a beat of a different drum, you're a lot of times hard to understand and appreciated in due diligence. So, you know, this kind of goes out to the memory of both her and Stanley, I think.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Rodney, again, thank you so much for bringing this to us and talking with us. And as always, it's always a pleasure having you here on Wild
Quincy. Absolutely.
I appreciate it, guys. Good job. Thank you so much.
All right. And that is a look at one of the more interesting and unfortunate gruesome crimes in the Quincy area. We'll be back with more after this on Wild Quincy.
Gosh, they say I'm too old to fight, and it's beginning to look like I'm even too old for this war job of mine. Boy, I can't eat or sleep. I'm losing weight, getting more jittery and worn out every day. I sure am discouraged. Whoa there, don't be so quick to blame your age or your job. Maybe you simply need more vitamin B and iron. You see, when you don't get enough vitamin B from your meals, you may lose your appetite, not eat enough to maintain normal weight and strength. And when you don't get enough iron from your food, you may be weak and washed out, feel only half alive. Well, if I do need more vitamin B and iron, how can I get them? The easiest way I know is take ironized yeast tablets. These pleasant little tablets are a cinch to use. They cost but a few pennies a day, and they give you both vitamin B and iron. That's why ironized yeast tablets have worked such wonders for thousands who only needed more of these substances. Quickly help them regain their old-time pep and strength, and 5, 10, even more pounds of good new flesh. So try ironized yeast tablets if more vitamin B and iron is what you need. Then see if soon you aren't saying,
"Who said I'm a has-been? Why, I've got pep to burn these days. I look like a new man with the pounds I've gained, and a promotion wouldn't surprise me one bit. Why didn't somebody tell me about ironized yeast tablets sooner?"
Well, we go back to the archives once again, and we dig into ionized yeast, Travis.
Is it ionized or ironized?
Oh, it's iron. Ironized. I'm sorry. I said ionized.
Either way, it sounds pretty high tech. They're putting something in something.
Yeah. So this is a weird... this kind of leads into a more deeper thing. If you're not on our Facebook page, head to our Facebook page. Check out, I posted a couple pictures of advertisements from the 1920s and 30s. And it was very funny because I came across multiple websites talking about how that women were too skinny back in the 1920s and 1930s. And so to gain the curves that the men like, they should use ironized yeast. So
it's for mass building, essentially. Is that what you're saying?
Well, but then I mean, it's the other way, too.
I don't, yeah. It's, it goes I had a hard time wrapping my, you know, it's complicated when you need two people for the voiceover, you know, because there just happens to be a guy that pops in and asks just the right questions.
Exactly. Yeah. But it could go either way. And it's funny because there's been a couple pages I ran across when I was researching this that you had, even in like a single newspaper, you would hit like page 12 where it was talking about, you know, women gain weight that you need to gain for to add the curves the men like. And then two pages later, it's women, you need to lose weight to look good for your man. Take ironized yeast. It's like, so like they would say they were doing both stories.
Yikes. Yeah. That time period's advertising in a nutshell, I think. So pretty wild.
The one thing that is they did hit, I think they talk about this in the advertisement itself, in the radio ad, is that it used to be that they added some vitamins as well, which back in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, getting vitamins was always a problem because the foods that you were eating did not have those vitamins in it, to where like today you look at the nutrition label, it's like, oh, 75% of your daily intake of vitamin B or whatever it might be.
Everybody's
they didn't have
blind.
As much of that back then. Yeah. So obviously they had issues with you know, iron deficiency and like stuff like B12 and stuff like that. So but yeah, check it out. If you haven't seen it, jump on our Facebook page, take a look at some of the pictures. It's just funny. It's funny how the transition. I don't think there's going to be hardly. I shouldn't say that. There's probably very few people, not anybody, but very few people that are like, how am I going to gain weight? That's usually not the problem.
Yeah, it seems like the minority of a problem, but yeah, you never
but
know.
It's still out there. It is, yep. So so maybe ironized yeast is the way to go. So anyway, thought that was kind of an interesting take on Indeed. Some advertising. Speaking of some interesting takes, how about we bring out the golden pipes?
Fire away.
And now it's time for Words of Wisdom from Adams County.
All right, Travis, time for the wit, the wisdom, the know-how from our forefathers and foremothers of Adams County. As we get closer to the end of the season, Travis, I felt like it was time I started digging in a little deeper on some of the number selection. So it was been a while ago, but we had a ton of selections of people that chose numbers leading into the season on our Facebook page. Yeah, for sure. So I pulled out some. They're not necessarily the greatest, but I thought that most some people would really appreciate getting maybe finding out what their number was. So I'm going to throw out a couple out. All right, if you're ready.
I'm always ready for this.
Okay. Well, let's go to Terry Guthrie. It chose 718, and that one is, if a lot of toadstools pop up overnight, rain will fall before long.
Okay.
It's good to know. St. Patty's Day, not too long ago, Rebecca Williamson, her choice was 1,086. You will dig up a large crop of fine potatoes if they are planted on St. Patty's Day.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Seems a little kind of little leading racist on potatoes and Irish people, but that's okay.
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
Yeah.
That's didn't okay. Even process that. Okay.
We love you and might, your patagore, we do.
This might be, you know, also against Irish, but Jennifer Berwinkle, 4255 was her number, and hers was rub a green walnut all over your wart, then bury the walnut. If the walnut roots, your wart will disappear.
Boy, that's a long time you got to wait for that to pan out, isn't it?
Yeah, got to make sure the tree comes up.
See, I thought you were going with the walnut on the furniture for scratch. You know what I'm talking about?
No, yeah, that would have made more
you
sense.
You ever tried
right?
that? I've never tried
Yeah, you got to, you need like a walnut tree, like walnut actual wood to do that.
Oh, do you? I didn't know.
I think it helps.
Okay.
I may be wrong.
I'm just going to start Krugmeier. Rubbing. Never mind. That almost came out really weird, Chris.
just stop right there, buddy.
Go ahead, moving on.
Kevin Krugmeier chose 976. The number is not there. I found some more missing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
What number was it? I'm going to write this down this time.
976. There was like five of them, 976 to 980.
I have a
missing.
Note that I will not remember the context of that number, but I have it written down.
Next time you go to the library, look up the first edition at the library and see if that's in there. It may be the most important folklore and wisdom that we might have ever attained.
Need that knowledge.
Exactly. Brenda Trappini, if I'm saying that right, chose 10,666, which I thought was kind of appropriate because it feels like it's kind of like a little bit of a devilish, devilish concept. Buckle but right. Accepting a delivered package wrapped in red paper is a sign of bad luck.
Does that apply on Valentine's Day?
I don't know. Christmas. I've wrapped some Christmas gifts in red paper.
Just blood red. Paper. That's right.
Yeah. Sarah Rubel, she chose 3323, which I think I've used before, but when I searched this one up, 3326 caught my attention. So I have to tell you about this one. A left-handed person must work 3 days for the devil.
Words of wisdom from Adams County.
Look at me with my pencil in my left hand.
Exactly.
Sounds like I got a side hustle to get with, Chris.
I'm like, wow, okay. So anyway, there's a look at your wit and wisdom and know-how from our forefathers and foremothers. We have some more numbers we'll try to get through before the end of the season. So yeah, thanks for everybody who submitted those numbers. Travis, I think we have one piece of the pie left, and that is the question of the day, which I didn't give you much leeway on.
Jeez, you gave me numeric, sorry.
Numeric order.
Right, straight, one after the other. Okay.
Exactly. When I built this question, I was like, I was going to spread it out.
Do you work for the IRS on the side, Chris? Is that your side hustle? It's designed a really tough situation.
Pennies off.
Okay.
You got to be exact numbers. Right. Amtrak station obviously runs between Quincy and Chicago twice daily. On average, the track takes 4 hours and 21 minutes, which is probably less than what it take to drive up there. How many stops are between Quincy and Chicago? You had option of 6, 7, 8, or 9. Travis, what's your thoughts?
Big yawn there. Sorry. I assume that's why you're chuckling. I'm going to go 8. Final answer.
Holy crap, Travis. That's the right answer.
Of course it is, Chris. Did you even Slam. Did you doubt me for a moment?
Not at all. Man, you nailed it. I'm very impressed.
You
all
know,
right.
Me and railroad tracks. I stumbled across this man's YouTube station called Hobo Shoestring.
Oh yeah.
Unfortunately, he just passed away like 2 weeks ago. Sad story, but for some reason, this guy riding the rails and giving all these weird little secrets about the railroad was interesting. So I might be overqualified for that question you gave me.
Is there still legitimate hobos?
He was a legitimate hobo.
Like riding trains?
Riding the trains.
Holy cow, that's cool.
Yeah, he died unfortunately, so.
Oh, that's sad.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, so if you are going to make the trek from Quincy to Chicago on the Amtrak, you're going to go through and make stops at Macomb, Galesburg, Kewaunee, Princeton, Mendota, Plano, Naperville, LaGrange, and then finally to Chicago's Union Station.
There you go. You know.
Now you know.
I think my secret to success here tonight has been not thinking and just picking a number that sounds good, or just a blurting it out. Option. Exactly. That's going to be my. That's what I'm going to do from now on. Okay.
Just throw something. It's B. And you don't even know. You don't even listen.
You'll be like, that's not even an option. Like, dang. Yeah.
Dang it.
Shut my miss. We're going to miss.
Well, Travis, I had to reach to get to this. And so I'll lead you in just in case. Our next episode's an unexplained episode. And the reason I chose this as the question of the day is because this gentleman, evidently, from what I could gather, spent some time in Chicago and maybe grew up in Chicago, but lived in Quincy.
Yes. Our next episode, and this will be interesting, features a man who's in his heyday. It was around Chicago when this isn't the time when Uri Geller was bending spoons and all these other things. And his name was Ted Serios. And he claimed that he was able to do what was called photography, meaning he would help kind of focus his little plastic device into a camera, a Polaroid camera, and think an idea basically that would print out on the Polaroid. And he goes really big and studied, and some people think it was a hoax, and some people think he was authentic. And I'm trying to figure out the circumstance, but he lived in Chicago, but moved to Quincy, and that's where he died. He lived in Quincy and around Mendon and Quincy here for a while until the time of his death. But all that was in the rearview mirror at that point. Nobody really knew who this guy was until his obituary kind of rang some bells and the media jumped on it. So Ted Serios, it's a heck of a story, and we'll be talking about that next time.
Yeah, so we'll have that coming your way in 2 weeks. For our Patreon fans, you can check out the bonus episode where we talk more about this crazy crime that happened here in the Quincy area, and then also dig into what other randomness we can find ourselves in. And Travis, before we wrap things up for this episode, though, are we missing anything?
No, just thanks everybody for listening. And if you want to get a hold of us, please do. We love hearing from you. You can go to wildquincy.com, check out what else is going on. You can email us at wildquincy@gmail.com, or else give us a phone call at 612-666-9453. Keep going with those sixes.
First time?
You think so? You think I would have memorized this by now, but I have not, Chris. Again, you can call or text to the voicemail at 612-666-9453. That's 666-WILD, as Chris likes me to say.
Thank you.
And you back to you, sir. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, and check us out on Facebook as well and the social medias. I think you're still doing some Twitter and some Instagram?
We've been doing the crucial things like new episodes, and we got a little lax on the other stuff. Yeah, so we'll see if we can pop some cool stuff up there for y'all.
Yeah, so check that out. Well, for Travis Hoffman, I'm Chris Ketters. You've been listening to Wild Quincy. We'll catch you guys next time.
Take care, everybody.
Wild Quincy is released every other Tuesday and is produced by Chris Ketters and Travis Hoffman. Sound designed by Downdraft Sound and Editing. And music by Travis Hoffman Music. I'm Bo Beecraft, and thanks for listening to Wild Quincy.